The entire concept of real-time strategy is, believe it or not, based on an adaptation or a video game adaptation of the book Dune. In modern times, we've had TV show based on video games that are also based on books in the Witcher series. And for some reason, Harry Potter has 7,000 video games and movie adaptations based on it.
Despite that hyperbole, we're only going to be looking at a couple of other books that we think deserve their own video game.
Beware of massive amounts of spoilers, as this was kind of a free-willing discussion that we came up with several of the video game concepts on the spot. But yeah, we have lots of ideas. Game companies, call us.
So enjoy this freewheeling, no holds barred, really off the cuff, no explanations given, in-depth look at how Joel's brain functions.
And stay tuned for the end as we give you some book recommendations. How long is your spring break?
A week.
But weren't you on spring break last week when you went to
DC? I texted you earlier this week, homie.
Okay, that's probably true. Time has no meaning.
Well, you say so, I guess.
Every day feels like it's both Monday and Friday somehow. It's very frustrating.
Awesome.
But I got through another committee deadline week without killing anyone.
So that's too bad. Something. You should really try killing people.
Just I know. At least I feel like it'd once. Be very cathartic and stress relieving. And not at all stress causing.
I don't know if that's how the world works, unfortunately.
No, that's 100% how it works. Murdering people never causes stress. Science.
Have you been hanging out with Jeffrey Dahmer again? We've Isn't talked about dead? This, Joel. We've talked about it. That's why you shouldn't hang out with him.
Honestly. No, I'm safe. Like, I got to stop with all my necromancy. 9 + 4 = 13.
Right. So today is the ninth day of the fourth month, right?
Okay.
And it's also Friday. But if you add the 9 and the 4 together, that means it's technically Friday the 13th.
And I think this is our 13th episode this season.
See? So I totally planned it that way.
Yeah, this is very, very ominous.
Right.
I don't know.
Just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page here. What page that is, we don't know. But it's definitely really in the book somewhere. That is.
I literally text Steven a few hours ago saying we should record an episode today. Do you want to do it on? And just kind of left it open-ended.
And now we're doing it.
So, I wish this was like a call-in show. And we could be like, do you want us to recommend books that to each other like the old school days? Or do you want us to talk about a topic that we kind of came up with?
Right. That would have made life a little easier, to be completely honest.
If this was a call-in show?
Yeah.
It would be really fun.
I love having other people tell me what to do.
Right? We got to figure out if there's a way to make a live episode. We don't have enough of a following to do that. I don't know.
I don't want it to be live. I just want someone to tell me what to do beforehand. And
then okay. It's not live. Just maybe some Twitter polls?
Yeah, I don't want the pressure of it being live. That's a lot for me to handle.
That's fair. We'll have to start doing some Twitter polls for topic ideas or some crap. Well, so which one would you rather do? Because I have a few books I could recommend. Or we could talk about our kind of idea about video game books. Books to video games. Yeah.
You know what? I can probably pull together either one. So if you've got a preference.
No, that's why I asked you. Because I didn't have a preference.
Yeah, but I turned it back on you.
No, you can't do that. I asked first.
And two. That's not how it works.
That's exactly how it works. And I don't even have a coin to flip. You do the coin flip thing where you know which one you want to do and it's in the air.
I don't think it actually works in real life.
It does. Do you have a coin nearby?
No.
I don't either. The closest coin I have is probably in my car.
I'm an adult. I use credit cards.
Right? I don't know when the last time I used cash to purchase thing.
871-1132.
That's not enough numbers.
Yeah, I wasn't keeping track. Sorry about that.
Okay, let's do the video game one, and then if we run out of things to talk about, we can do some recommendations at the end.
That sounds great. Thanks for making the decision, sucker.
Yeah, and you knew if you stalled long enough, I would.
That's how I do everything.
Just stall until someone does it for you.
It's never not worked yet.
I mean, it's not a horrible strategy. As far as like life strategies goes, it's not the worst.
That's what I keep saying, and people keep ignoring me. I don't know why.
Well, you now have a Switch, and I'm assuming a lot of your free time has gone into playing through Breath of the Wild. How far have you gotten?
The tower, or whatever it is. The end. The end.
Okay. It was like the tower? There's thousands of towers in the game. Or like 30, I don't know. But so you're at the castle, you've beaten the game?
Not yet.
Okay. But you're just at, because the castle, depending on what order you do things in, is easy or, you know, there's 7 boss fights in it, so.
Yeah, I did it the correct way.
Okay, so there's just the centaur dude boss fights. What are those called?
Lynels?
Lynels, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that plus, a thing I saw on Reddit, which was a early concept for a fan game based on the Mistborn books, got me thinking about what other books that we've read that we think would be untapped potential for video games. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But we're winging it hardcore, so we don't know how much we have on this topic.
But damned if we ain't going to try to make it through a whole hour.
Well, do you have any off the top of your head that you think it'd be a fun concept or maybe just like a piece of a, because I have one that's just a piece of a book that I'm surprised no one's turned into a game yet.
Okay, so really what would that be? I'll let you start off since you seem to.
Okay, yeah, this one's just simple. And I think I mentioned it earlier on in this show when we talked about Ender's Game. But how in the world has somebody not made a Battle School game? Like a 3D environment, zero gravity, like tag game, basically. Mm-hmm. But it's team-based, so it's not just a first-person shooter, but it's like a first-person shooter where you're in command of a large team that you have to... So it's both tactics and FPS and in this, like... almost like works like dogfighting in this 3D no gravity environment. Like there is so much potential there. And those are some of my favorite parts of that book, just the way those fights were described. Why has nobody made a game like that? You don't even have to base it on Ender's Game IP. Just do that.
I mean, that's a fair question. It almost sounds like one of those old school Star Wars games where you spend the whole game just flying through space. Just like the mechanics of it. But I think the idea of a tag game could definitely work in the way that a lot of like indie games tend to go nowadays.
Yeah, there's a lot of those like small indie FPS games with a gimmick. And this one would be the gimmick is everything's in zero gravity.
You're a 12-year-old boy and you're murdering people.
Exactly. But. No, everything's in zero gravity and you have... you have an entire team that you can order around. So it's not just one-on-one. It's like, I mean, there's other kinds of tactics games. Like you said, Star Wars, like the Star Wars Rebel Commando, where you're in charge of like a group of 4, like imagine. And maybe as you progress in the game, you can unlock or develop formations that you can order your team to go on to try to capture the other goal. Like there's a lot of potential there that I want to play that game.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, that could be cool.
Okay.
All right, so I guess one that I think would be really cool to turn into, I mean, obviously we've already talked about like the, or you said, sorry, I'm going to back up because my brain just apparently decided to stroke out. Wow. Good grief. Now I know what it's like talking to my grandpa. Okay. So, anyways.
Always fun.
Right. I think it would be really cool to do a... like A Knight in King Arthur's Court, a Mark Twain book.
Okay.
because basically, like, you get sent back in time and you've got some of the, like, modern knowledge and things like that that you can draw from on, like, your submenu, but then you have to figure out how to create society from the ground up. So almost like a Civilizations game, but you're trying to create a modern society in medieval
in
England,
Arthurian time with magic and stuff existing.
Right, right. And trying not to get, like, called out as a witch or burned at the stake or something like that. So
I like that.
Yeah. I think
that's
that would
a really,
be really
fun Sims style, almost like Black and White, but, like, I like that idea. That sounds really fun. I need to read that book though. But yeah, that's
you've
cool.
never read the book?
I don't think I've seen the movie that's based on that, right? The
there's a lot
the kid
of them,
in King Arthur's Court or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's one. Actually, we can hold off on this. This was actually going to be the book I was going to recommend if we we're going to talk. So
okay,
because
well,
for
yeah,
some reason
can...
I didn't think that you liked Mark Twain or have ever read his books.
I'm not a huge fan of Mark Twain's most popular stuff, but all of his short stuff and all of his, like, short essays and short stories I love, but his big long books are always just annoying to me.
Yeah, it's totally fair. Totally
gotcha. Fair. Okay, well, we got to back up, and maybe I'll put this in earlier. We got to talk about the thing I sent you. We've both read Mistborn. We've talked briefly, or we talked a whole episode about it, I guess, even though neither of us had read it in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I'm rereading through it, and I completely forgot about the Koloss. Do you remember those things?
Yeah.
The big blue-skinned, like, mm-hmm. things that grow into their... Yeah, I completely mm-hmm. forgot they existed until my second read, or probably third read-through of the series, because it's been so long since I read them.
Yeah.
But I was reading those, and so I started following a subreddit on them, people just talking about those books, and somebody posted a fan video that we'll link to on our Instagram and Twitter. But it's basically just a very early build of just the movement system in the game, and that's probably the coolest concept for a video game, like, style of movement I've ever seen, because in the books, they control metal, or can see metal and can move through metal. And the main way the most powerful users move around is by steel pushing and pulling. So they burn this metal that they activate their magic that where they can see blue lines tracing out to every tiny bit of metal around them. And then they can push or pull against that metal to, like, hop and kind of fly strangely. So it's a strange physics game or the way they
it's
do it.
It's kind of like hopping through the air.
Yeah.
Without touching the ground.
And you can, like, balance on top of it, and you can highlight more. But in this game engine that these people are building, it works exactly like it's described in the book, and it just looks so much fun. It looks almost as fun as, like, the Spider-Man games where you're just swinging around the city. And once
that's
you get used to that.
Pretty good way to describe the game mechanics, because that's exactly what you're doing in Spider-Man, but you are confined to tall building areas.
Yeah, so this one, it's any metal. Like, I would love this game to get done to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd but that one, cool. Yeah, the other one I thought of, and this was just as I was walking the dogs, I was thinking of all the possibilities of turning the Lightbringer books into a game. And you couldn't do it the storyline that the book's based on. You'd have to go way earlier, maybe even the lead up to the Prism War that was, like, the inciting incident for the book.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, you could make it an open world RPG style game where
you get to choose your, like, color class and all that.
Maybe, like, the first time you play through, you get to choose a single color. You're just a single color bender, not bender. What are they called?
Bender. Lightweaver.
Drafter.
Drafter.
Yeah. So you're just a single color drafter at first, and then as you play through the game, and one of the mechanics of my version of this game would be that you will eventually break your halo like you do in those books, you will die or be hunted down and killed. And maybe there's, like, a end game thing where you go crazy and get super powerful and you have to try to survive as long as possible. But then, like, all the points and everything you've unlocked in each playthrough lets you purchase new powers for your, like, next character. So it works a little bit like a what are those kind of games called? The Bloodborne series. What are those called? Roguelike or roguelite. Yeah. I think the rogue games where there's permanent death. Every time your character dies in the story, you have to start back over with a different character. But you can use the stuff you've earned in the first game to access more powers until eventually you can become a full like a full draft, full chrome drafter. What are those called? A prism.
Prism. Yeah. They're called a prism.
Yeah. That's what the whole thing's based on. So eventually you work your way up to becoming a prism. But you have to die multiple times. You have to play through all of these things. But I think that game would be so interesting because depending on the color you choose or the couple of colors you choose as you progress, infinite amounts of like play styles. Like if you're a Paro Bender, it'd be like Assassin's Creed style game where you're sneaking around and assassinating people.
Yeah.
If you're a yellow bender, you're just blowing shit up all the time.
As you.
Yeah. If you're green or blue, you have to like be a combat skills. And then purple and what would purple be? I can't remember how purple was used.
I don't remember how most of them work, to be honest, but this idea of I love games where you get to kind of pick your class, but the class actually means something.
Right.
Like I played through Skyrim and you can choose a different class, but it gets kind of boring because all of the classes are essentially the same with like some mild changes to make it seem like they matter. Mm-hmm. But I would really enjoy a game where I got to actually be and play through someone with completely different powers, because that gives you almost infinite options to play through it multiple times.
Yeah. And you could like, I mean, if you set that far enough back, you could have like Easter eggs in the game to do like leading you into the story that people know and love or tolerate, depending on if you're me or you. But the rest of it is just like exploring this world, which is, that's one of the things I love so much about those books, is he made an amazing world that you didn't get enough time to like play with. And so this one sets some super simple story, like you're trying to overthrow a crazy king or something, and then let yourself have infinite playthroughs to get there as every playstyle you want and explore this giant world. That would be so much fun.
I completely agree. That was actually going to be one of the books that I recommended to turn into a video game, but I didn't know how to do it. I like your idea. I like it a lot.
Good. I win.
No. How dare you? My Connecticut Yankee idea was gold.
No, that is good. That is really fun. I like that. I was trying do you have another one?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I was trying to think, like, I was like, what books have already been turned into games? And the only one I could immediately think of was The Witcher. And that's the way they did that is they took the book series and, like, went 10, 20 years in the future and made the games tell that story, like, after the book series has ended. And that's why, and then the TV show is now going back and just giving the books exactly. Because the books are just a bunch of series of vignettes, which is what the TV is. At least that's how far I've gotten into the books.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, what else, like, really fun versions of you could do that with, where it still progresses the story, but doesn't necessarily take away from the books? Because that's always the problem. If you're turning something into a different medium, it's gonna you're going to lose something along the way.
Right.
So,
and that's why most people hate the movies that come off of books every single time. They just lose a little bit.
Yeah, but there's plenty of books out there that we've read that we kind of wish we knew what happened next. Like, they ended perfectly and you're fine with it, but you would also like to spend more time in that world.
Oh, and most, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, like, video games adaptations for books should just do that. They should take that feeling and that world you got to make and let us play in it and let us do whatever we want to in it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that was, I don't know if you had this experience, but when I, you know, grew up loving Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. And I don't know if you ever played those games when they came out. Those were some of the best adaptations of a movie into a video game that I've ever seen.
Oh yeah. Like and the Shadow of Mordor and those games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shadow of Mordor. So Shadow of Mordor is like a little bit different and it's fun, but it's not exactly what I'm talking about. They actually made movie adaptation games.
Oh no, those were awesome. Like old school PS2 titles.
Yeah, like I had it on GameCube and mine were The Return of the King and then The Two Towers. And it was awesome because you got to play through the movie. As whatever character you wanted to be, you got to like fit out your weapons. It was a little bit of an RPG and it was just super fun because you got to explore all these areas and be a badass
And it wasn't just a cheap tie-in. Like, you still were just playing these scenes from the movies, but the movies were long enough that all the additions, and the movies had so much stuff, all the additions didn't feel out of place and didn't ruin it for you because you got to do so much more than they did in the movies. And it wasn't was stupid, like, fetch missions or something like you'd get in, like, a Pirates of the Caribbean adaptation game or something. That was meant to be a joke, like, but it's
No, it's true.
That actually happened. My mom bought me that one year. I think it was for the PS2, the, like, Pirates of the Caribbean video game. And that's the first time I've ever had, like, a movie tie-in video game that I was just like, or first time I ever got one. And I hated it so much because it was the stupidest game in the world. It was obviously made as an afterthought to try to cash in on things instead of the Lord of the Rings ones, which are obviously made as Lord of the Rings games and then, like, modeled after the actors who played them.
That was good. You gotta just funnel money to Daddy Disney. Gotta do
always. Okay, well, let's think along that line. And I have no more, like, in the chamber, so I'm just thinking out loud now. What other books or book series that I've read that I would love to explore the world more?
Okay. For me, it's like it's most fantasy books because they just make these really in-depth worlds that sometimes you just don't get to spend enough time in. But turning them into a video game, the problem is that a lot of them are just going to be very similar to fantasy games that are out there. Like, a Game of Thrones game would be basically worthless because it's Skyrim, and that's fine. But
the Animorphs books had old school games. That were like Pokemon ripoffs, basically, because you had to collect different animal morphs, but they were playing through, like, specific stories from the books, and that's all fine and dandy, and that was cool, but it was really old school, bad animation, tiny GameCube or Game Boy games. I think it was still in black and white. I would play the crap out of a modern, fully 3D Animorphs game, and there is a story beat in the Animorphs series that would work perfectly, so you didn't even have to play as any of the main characters. Because near the end, when everything breaks into all-out war, they start recruiting other people to be morphers to help them fight in the all-out war. And they send these other – they're also other teenagers, and they send them on, like, secret missions. And so playing a game of that would be kind of like a stealth commando fighting game, almost, that you have so many morphs and you have a specific objectives that you're sent on by the main Animorphs crew. That would be a fun game.
Well, I was just going to say mine was going to, like, turn a corner. So if you want to keep talking about this.
Oh no, I was just, that was just thinking out loud. Like, that would be really cool. And with the, like, resurgence in Animorph popularity right now with, all the comic books being released, They're reimagining all of the books as comic books and republishing them, and talks of a movie in the works again, even though the main writers have both left the talks of the movie because they didn't like the direction it was going. But still, the popularity is there. Maybe we will eventually get an Animorphs game because everybody likes wanting to become animals and kill people with them.
Is that right?
Okay.
Why not? that almost sounds like the Golden Compass or something. So you were talking a minute ago about finding books that you just want to spend more time in that world. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people who grew up in the same generation as you and I would probably want to spend more time just exploring the Redwall world.
That would be
cool.
And I could
be wrong on that. But I don't know how to turn that into a game. There's, like, it would probably be a puzzle-based game because puzzles are so big in the books.
Well, let's story break it for a second. What are the biggest things? By the way, this is a side plug for the Story Break podcast, which I used to love and haven't listened to in a while. It's really fun. They take an hour to turn some random IP or thing into a movie pitch or a TV show pitch. It's really cool. And the way they do it usually is they start with what is the core concepts of all the Redwall books? And you said they're puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, like, they're puzzles. They are, they always make you hungry. and there's usually some, I mean, there's almost always some battle or some crazy violence, warfare. And they usually have some kind of moral point to each story, but those are the three big things that you think of when you think of Redwall. So how would you turn those three into a single game?
Well, I would avoid the cooking almost entirely because I hate books that make me cook things, or hate games that make me cook things.
Really? You don't like the cooking stuff even in Zelda?
No, I hate it because I'm not good at it and I don't like spending the time to figure out what things go with what. And I also don't like spending half of my game like farming for random ass ingredients.
No, that's fair, but I think if you just, I think if you just keep a crafting element in there, like potion making in Zelda, I think if you put something like that into whatever game we make, that would get across the, and just have beautiful food animations, that would get across the food part. Because like most open world games now have some kind of food making. Even the new Pokemon had that. So we could have that element.
Is that here to stay? Is that here to stay now?
I hope not. Because it doesn't fit in every game, but they keep trying to put it in every game. But I liked it in Breath of the Wild.
Okay. Well, that's fine. See you, Sarah.
But maybe it's more of a tactics style game, because usually there's like one hero. Oh, maybe it's like a Fire Emblem game. Like a Fire Emblem, but like puzzles. Because Fire Emblem games are usually about, I mean, they're character interactions and you're like almost graphic, like movement novel things where you're trying to become friends with or enter relationships with all these characters so that they fight on your side when war breaks out, and then it becomes like a tactics based game.
Okay.
So what if, so yeah, it's gotta be something like that where, whatever book you're covering. So let's say we're covering the actual Redwall where they're trying to find Mortimer's sword and, defend the keep or defend the Abbey.
Right. Right.
So you have to do all the puzzles, and that's, and you have to, it's like a puzzle based game, like early top-down Legend of Zelda, but some of the puzzles are food-based, and then you have to defend the keep by building up an army or something.
Sure.
Like, I can see this as, like, an old-school Legend of Zelda game mixed with, like, Command and Conquer-style games.
Okay. So, I don't... I'm trying to think how I feel about the top down, because I partly want it to be an open world exploration game, because there are so many cool different, like different books.
Right.
And the books all deal with different areas of this giant world that Brian Jakes created. So I want to be able to explore each of those kind of as its own little thing, but I don't know if that's just too much work.
No, I think we could do something like that. I think, and this is, of course, just going back to my absolute love for the game Black and White, the old PC game that no one's ever heard of anymore, and they won't make a new version of that game. But you could do it like that, where it's 3D animated, but it's still basically top-down, because in that game you play as a god. But this game, it works a little bit like that, but you can choose characters you play as. And go back down into ground, like eye level, and do things. But when it actually comes into warfare, you can't be the hero anymore, and you have to plan the big battles.
Okay.
But that might take away from it too. I don't know. Redwall is a very interesting IP to make a game out of, but I don't know what it would look like.
Oh, I have no idea. You would probably, I don't know. There are a lot of different ways that you could run with it.
Because so often, I mean, the books usually follow one or two main characters.
Exactly.
But then they're about so much more than that character. Like, that character is just like your audience stand-in, which is why I'm thinking making it more of a...
I think that if you're going to do a Redwall thing, you could almost do it as a series of mini-games, where you kind of base each of the different mini-games off of one of the characters in the book or something. So you have different abilities, depending on what mini game it is.
Okay.
Or different strengths or something like that. And so the mini games, you know, might be a little extensive, but they're not going to be like full game length. So you don't have to live with the complexity of all of these different character choices, but you get to play as each one with different objectives. And maybe they are trying to, I don't know what the overall objective would be, raise Brian Jakes from the dead.
Yeah. RTS. That's the real-time strategy. That's what I was trying to
think. Oh, okay. That's what you're going for.
Yeah. But no, like, you're right. A series of mini games, or even a text-based style game would work kind of like those. And I've only ever played one of these games, but the lawyer games, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
What is that game called? But the text-based, not traditional text-based, but like you have to make choices in dialogue trees and stuff, and you're a lawyer or an investigator trying to uncover a crime. What are those games called?
I have no idea. I'm sorry. This is too obscure for me.
They're Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney games.
Okay.
Okay. They're super popular in Japan, and they're a big following in Nintendo fanboys.
Gross.
But
I'm out.
Yeah, but that kind of style where, except for, as you were saying, it's a series of mini games and not just a series of text adventures, but you're playing through as multiple different characters, that would be really cool. And that does lend itself more towards a Fire Emblem style game, because that's what you're basically doing, except for you're replacing all the dialogue trees and trying to get the right outcome with mini games and puzzles. And I like that idea a lot.
That's true.
That could be fun. Okay.
Cool.
All right. Okay. So we've made Redwall.
Made Redwall. We're done. It's the best game ever.
Right. What else do we have, though? Let's see if we can explore the depths of this concept even further. I don't know why I got all esoteric with language there.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. It was real weird. I'm not happy about that.
I don't either.
Turn it down a notch over there.
Nope. We're using only $10 words from now on.
Okay. Good deal. So as Nietzsche once wrote...
Nietzsche is not a $10 word. It's just a stupidly pronounced word.
Be a $10 hooker.
He probably, or she, it probably would be a $10 hooker.
That's, his gender was very well known.
No, I'm saying, you're making this less fun. I was just saying, Nietzsche is an androgynous name nowadays.
See, it's more that this is a weird tangent, and so I'm just like,
very odd. That's all I'm saying. So I don't think Nietzsche is necessarily a male or female name anymore.
Okay.
As you okay. Do. Yeah. That's how tangent over. That. I'm looking at my Goodreads now to see if there's any other ideas I have.
So I think you could turn the, what was that? The Demon Cycle books by Peter V. Brett into a, like a
the Warded Man game. Ones.
The Warded Man. Yeah. You could turn that into a pretty standard, like almost Doom type of game.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be hard to do, but I don't know that it would be that interesting. Let's see.
But especially like the maze part in the first book.
Yeah.
That would be really fun to play through.
I agree. That would be pretty all right.
Just to be that much of a badass, just destroying
everything demons. Left and right.
Yeah. With and your honestly, bare hands. That's while everyone else around you is fighting with. Yeah, that'd be fun.
That's one of the reasons why like the Assassin's Creed games are so fun, because you're basically a god among mortals and nothing can stand up against you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun sometimes to have a game where there's not a lot of thought and you're just walking through enemies like it's no one's business.
Oh. There's one. Okay. Codex Alaria or Lyra.
Okay.
The Gem Butcher series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are based on Pokemon, first of all. So yeah. It's got the that's already built in that it's got a game concept. And then adding that with the entire Roman Legion aesthetic, giving you a swords and sandals type game, but with Pokemon magic, that would be a really fun concept for a video game.
Yeah,
and you could even just follow the books pretty closely, or at least the overarching plot pretty closely, where they're fighting each other at first, and then they're fighting the insect things.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't remember what they're called.
Yeah.
But yeah.
This it would almost work like a World of Warcraft style game. This could be, and it would work a little bit like the ones we already talked about, the Lightbringer. Because you'd have different like classes and animals you'd have to, or not animals, but like the spirit things you'd have to catch and tame before you could use their powers.
Yeah.
so you could choose your powers as you went. That could be really cool.
I agree. A lot of yours involve choosing spirit animals. Ideas.
Well, it's one of those things that it's pretty easy to that's a pretty fun game concept. I like games where you have several options of how you play through them. I just finished Hades recently, which I cannot recommend enough. There's a reason it won all those awards. But you literally every single playthrough, you can completely change the way you do everything, or like the weapons you use and the boons you get. And I like that concept for a game because it just feels like you get to be part of the creative process because you're doing whatever you want with it.
Okay.
And that's what I want in a video game. I don't really care to sit through a story where I just make choices during it. It feels too much like a choose your own adventure book. And I don't like the ones that are so on the rails. You're just uncovering the story by shooting everything. I like to be able to make choices and to be a part of it. Like,
okay.
So those are the kind of games I'm going to be making if we're turning books into them.
You might as well. All right. I understand that, though. Sorry for calling you out on that. Jeez. What was I thinking? Okay. That would be a good one. Would you ever want a Dresden Files video game?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how it would work. So maybe if someone gave me a pitch that made sense, like I can't fathom how you would fit that into a game. Because you already have all the Harry Potter games and so many games where you have magic, but part of the stuff with books about magic is you have to learn it, you have to internalize it, and it's not just a list of button presses that is always what's going to happen in a game. Yeah. And the Dresden Files are so much more about using magic in very very clever ways as opposed to just blasting your way through things.
Yeah.
So it'd be very difficult to get the same feeling in a video game because it's all going to have to be scripted to use your magic in a very clever way. And if you're just adapting the books, if you've read the books, you know exactly how to do it every time. So you would never get that feeling of, oh, now I understand how they're going to win because you already know.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
I don't know how you could translate that into a game. I know there's like card games and stuff based on the Dresden Files where you like just play with the established characters. I could see the Dresden Files being a fighting game.
Yeah, I mean, he does use a lot of a brute force, so that would make a little bit of sense, I guess.
Like, I could see just taking all the Dresden Files characters and making a Mortal Kombat-style fighting game. That could be really cool.
Okay.
You could still get to use all the different magics, but there's less of a, you know, kind of a mystery story setup. There's nothing you have to discover. And you could even do it like the modern... the more modern Mortal Kombat games where there is a story going on, but the story is just leading you from one fight to the next. It's not just a tournament style.
Okay.
So you could pick your character at the beginning and then the story will lead you and you'll have to just do a fight through all the different characters you know in the from the books. That could be really fun because I would love, obviously Dresden, playing as Dresden would be fun, but then playing as all the minor characters that we talked about that we love, like playing as the Archive or the Archive's like body, like Defender, playing as the dude who just summons a ton of those little gray people. Like that.
You make a good point with books. I think most books that I would want into a video game, I would almost want a pretty hefty option to play the side characters because you usually get the main character. You flesh him out, you understand him, and it's great. Moving on. But then there are a lot of really cool secondary characters that you don't get to see as much of. So I think that's why most of my games that I've talked about have multiple options for people, because I want to play out parts of their story.
Right. Well, that could be, especially like, since, spoiler alert, we have to put a spoiler alert at the beginning of this episode, but especially since... Murphy died in the last book, like playing out as a detective game set in the Dresden Files universe as Murphy would also be a cool idea.
Yes, it would.
As opposed to just a fighting game with all the characters, you're a detective trying to solve some supernatural crime and then Dresden will eventually show up in the story and you'll get to interact with everybody else. But otherwise, it's a detective game. That could be cool.
That could be cool. Now, I do not want a game that takes that idea and does what some video games do, where it is a character who isn't in the books at all, and they're just investigating something while the main character
while one of the books is happening.
Appearances every once in a while. I hate stuff like that. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's not as, it's just, it's boring.
It is. And you want to play as someone from your books, from your memories. So.
Yeah. I like that. All right. We've talked about this for about 40 minutes. I know I'm going to probably cut out at least 10 minutes of silence.
There was a lot of silence.
We were just thinking out loud too much. I'm going to scroll through your Goodreads and see if anything else jumps onto you. And then I have a book recommendation I want to give.
Oh, you know what? I would actually like a John Grisham video game.
Okay. I'm listening.
Well, the reason is because you always start out as like, you'd have to play with it a little bit to make it more action-oriented, but you're always running from the mob. And so just making it kind of like a escape the city game, I think would be kind of an interesting spin on it. So don't actually base it word for word off of any of his books or anything, but turn it into a, like, you're in a city, the mob is after you, and you have to find a way to get out of the city.
Okay.
I think that would be cool.
Just like an escape game.
Just an escape game. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with John Grisham, other than that's how it sparked.
This is having less and less to do with John Grisham as you're talking. But
right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like his books. So.
I mean, I just saw Patriot Games on my Goodreads, and I was like, we have all of the Tom Clancy, like, Rainbow Six games.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's basically exist the whole already. Call of Duty franchise.
Yeah.
So.
I was immediately, when I saw that, I was like, oh, wait a minute. We already have that.
Yeah.
We 100% have that.
Already done.
What about Foundation? Can you think of a way Foundation would be turned into a video game?
No.
I think that one's too... Yeah, I don't think that one would work. It would take a... It would take a truly insane... next gen system to do this and to do it right, but Libriomancer would be really fun game, where you can, I mean, I guess you could do it simply if you just had very limited options, but where you, with every problem you have to face, you have to go find a book and pull something out of it to face it. That could be cool, but it'd be really hard to do that without it being like, feel very scripted where you only have, oh, I just have to use these two guns and kind of thing, instead of the unlimited possibilities that the concept actually has.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that we just, there's going to be so much I have to cut in this episode. It's going to be, it's going to be so long. Okay.
You just scrap it and start from the beginning.
No, this was fun, and I like what we came up with.
Well,
it's not going away. Okay, what does, oh, shit. I was gonna say, what does the letter of the book you want to recommend start with? And then I remember mine starts with A technically, so I would have to go first anyways.
Okay.
Unless yours starts with a number. Does yours start with a number?
No.
Oh no! Mine starts with a T.
Yep. Alright, I have to go first then.
Yes.
Okay. So my book, as I said a minute ago, that I want to recommend is A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court by Mark Twain.
Gotcha. Yeah. I have not read it, but I've seen the movie.
Yeah, that's fair. So I don't actually like most Mark Twain books. I blame my high school and middle school English teachers, but I think most of them are okay, to say the best of them. A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, though, I love. It's a really good book. It's the only Mark Twain book that I own, and it's a really fun concept. So it essentially, for those of you who don't really know what it's about, there is a man who lives in the 1800s, and somehow he is magically transported back to Arthurian England, whenever the heck that's supposed to be. And while he's there, he basically tries to impart the knowledge of the 1800s into King Arthur's world. And as I was reading this the first time, I was like, man, that would be so cool. I could go back and I could be like this super wealthy or super influential person, and that would be really fun. And then the second time I read through it, I was like, I don't actually know how anything in the modern world works.
And if someone asked me to create electricity from scratch, I would probably start hitting some rocks together. And that's right. It.
It's the whole problem of time travel, that we think we'd be like gods to them, but do you know how a cell phone works? Do you know how to drill for a well? Yeah.
No. And honestly, most people back then would be way smarter than me because they'd be like, hey, don't eat that plant. Why? Mm-hmm. Oh, it'll give you diarrhea for 3 weeks. Good to know. You know? And I would just be sitting over here munching on some red berries because I was hungry and didn't know what to eat. And they'd be living their best lives. But it's a really cool book. It's really well written. And Mark Twain is pretty good with snark. I know you like his short stories, and a lot of his quotes are very biting. And that's just his wit. And it comes out in the Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court pretty well. But it's kind of a wild book because at one point, the main character ends up developing like a telegraph line through all of medieval England. It takes some interesting twists.
Nice.
But it's pretty fun. It's a fun romp.
All right. I'll have to give it a try because as you said, that's the part of Twain I like is his wit. But I don't really like his long-winded stuff. Okay. Well, mine is also by an author, because you've read another of her trilogies. This is The 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K. Jemisin. And this book, I thought it was really, really good. And then I started reading the sequel and realized it was so much more amazing than I thought. I think it's a new trilogy. I can't actually tell how long it is. But the concept of this one is the birth of a mythos. Like, it starts this story well into this world's history where all the big bad stuff has already happened, and like nations have been like grown and fallen, and the gods are like slaves to a specific family. And it's a very interesting concept set up. But then by the end of the book, they have changed the world drastically to a completely new world order, and it changes like the mythos and the religion that the whole world is based on. And then the next book puts you in just a random character's POV that lives in this new world, like a decade later. Okay. And it's just like, that's amazing that you give us an entire book building up. And the further you get into the second book, the more that concept kind of falls away, and it's continuing that the original story, or at least, you know, it's continuing that original story 20 years later. But the setup and payoff of that opening chapter of we've spent this entire book basically on Mount Olympus dealing with like squabbles between gods and the ruling families of this world. And then the very next thing you read is how the rest of the world interacts with the drastic things that they changed on Mount Olympus, and how regular people interpreted all of that and created a mythology around it is so cool. Like, that's such a cool concept that I'd highly recommend reading it.
Okay. Well, I think N.K. Jemisin is really good at building interesting worlds. So I would be interested in seeing how that whole thing unfolds in a different setting than the one I've already read.
Yeah. And she does a really good job of this in this one of, like you said, she does a good job of world building. And in the last one of the what was it called? The Broken Earth trilogy. There was so much that you just wish you knew throughout the books. And in this one, it does kind of the opposite. It's like it's giving you all the information up front, everything you want to know. And then,
thank goodness,
and then backs all the way up and says, okay, but now here's the next book. It's like, but now here's a person just living in the world that doesn't know any of this and dealing with this stuff. And it's like, whoa, that's really cool. That's really fun. So I like
that. That is fun. Okay. Very cool. That was one of the most frustrating things of the Broken Earth trilogy is that I still don't know.
That you don't know the rules the whole time. Yeah. And in this one, like it's very much, I don't know. It's very drastically different, but it's very much, there's still like stuff you don't know. There's still history you discover along the way, but they're telling you all the rules. There's an audience stand-in character that's being given. This is how this works. This is how this works. From the get-go. And it's all to set up this, oh, well, now this is how regular people are interpreting that crap. It's fun.
Okay. Very interesting.
All right. Well, I don't know how long this episode is going to be. I always like to give like a time signature. We're like, we've been talking for about an hour. There's so much I have to cut out of this one because of our meandering.
You could definitely say we've been talking for about an hour. Sorry that this 20-minute episode wasn't up to our normal standards.
But it was fun. Let's, before we leave, refresh our audiences and our own memory on the writing prompts.
One? Got it.
Yeah, no, on the writing prompts we sent to each other.
I don't know.
Because I don't remember what you sent to me, and I don't remember what I sent to you either. But I've started writing again. I've almost finished rewriting part one of this thing I'm working on. Okay. But I need something else to work on.
I think I said that I wanted you to write something based in Antarctica, but I don't remember.
Oh, right. It was the it was that that station. You wanted me to write like a thriller that wasn't supernatural based in that Arctic station, I believe.
Yeah, do that. I think whatever you gave me was like really stupid hard. I think you told me to like have two chosen one characters who had to figure out.
Oh, right. Chosen one. Yes, I was saying you wanted me. Okay, I found them. You said you would like me to write a thriller that takes place at the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station and can't be supernatural. And I told you to write, "The Dark One rose, the scholars and prophets scoured the countryside to find the foretold chosen one. It's now the last battle. The forces of good or evil are fighting at what could be Armageddon, but everyone knows that no matter what heroics takes place on the field, the outcome will be determined by the true fight between the hero and the great evil. But two chosen ones have shown up. They both fulfill every minute detail of the prophecies, but the Forsythes also all agree that the final battle is to be one-on-one. The Dark One is here. Who do you send to fight?"
Okay. Yeah, I remember. I tried to sit down and start this like 3 or 4 times, and the problem is that it requires so much backstory that I couldn't figure out how to fit all of that in.
See, I envisioned this when I gave it to you as, because you're good at writing dialogue, where I'm not. So I envisioned this as kind of like a debate between two people who neither of which really want to go out and fight Satan or the great evil or whatever, but both like are worthy to, kind of, and they just have to debate each other. I don't know. That's how kind of I envisioned it, but I one of the reasons I gave this to you was it because I didn't know where to go with this, but I think it's a fun concept.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, well, I'll get to work on mine. If you're still stumped in like a week on this one of even where to start, I'll give you a different prompt.
All right, I can do that.
We might be back with some original writings again next week or something. Who knows? We're making this up as we go along.
We might quit.
Yeah, we might just call it a day or a year. I don't know how long we've been doing this. Definitely pandemic. more than a day.
Let's call it a pandemic. Let's be done.
Yeah, let's call it a pandemic. Yeah. I love that that is a perfect description for the amount of time we've been through.
Yeah.
Oh, life. It's stupid. Not really worth it.
Wow. Do you need help, buddy?
No.
Do you need me to call someone?
It was so much darker than I intended it to be.
It's really hard, man.
Oh. I'm sorry. Yeah, go talk to people if you're that depressed. That was me joking, but it got darker as I said it out loud. Oh, I'm going to stop recording. Bye, guys.